It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. There was a time in America when being a socialist, or even having been a socialist, could get you into all kinds of trouble. Today, it could get you elected president. Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders has brought socialism back into vogue. He refers to himself as a democratic socialist. So what exactly is socialism? How does it differ from or is similar to democratic socialism? And what is the stigma attached to socialism? I'm joined in studio by a couple of Point Park University professors. Jenny Rice is an assistant professor of history at Point Park, and Robert Ross is an associate professor of global cultural studies. Good to have you both with us. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'd like to hear from you with your comments and your questions about socialism. 412-246-2002 is the number to call. That's 412-246-2002. Email is ESSPGH at WESA.FM and on Twitter at ESSPGH. We're here to have a rollicking discussion, to talk about the mystique of socialism, to perhaps dispel some of the myths surrounding socialism. Again, the number 412-246-2002. The organization known as the Democratic Socialists of America says that democracy and socialism go hand in hand, and that all over the world, wherever the idea of democracy has taken root, the version or the vision of socialism has taken root as well. Everywhere but in the United States, and because of this, false ideas about socialism have developed in the U.S. So let's start with this question. Is socialism traditionally misunderstood in the United States? Robert, you want to jump in?
Sure. I think it's definitely misunderstood in the United States and probably worldwide as well. And the relationship between socialism and democracy is actually one where I would agree with the Democratic Socialists of America in that they should go hand in hand. They haven't historically always, but
why should they?
Well, I think on two levels they should. One, an arena which we don't really think of as democratic or non-democratic is the workplace. And for socialists, the workplace must be a democratic arena. In other words, instead of having a dictatorial boss who dictates all the terms of what you do and how you can do it, a socialist workplace would be one where workers collectively manage the workplace, manage production, and collectively own the workplace and the means to produce something. On the other hand, at a larger scale, a country, a society, a world that is socialist would have to be democratic because it would be one where the proletariat, the working class, the people who are in the majority would collectively run the society, run the government.
So, Jenny, let me ask you, does democracy and socialism go hand in hand based on the history that you've studied, the models that exist in Europe?
Oh, absolutely. I don't think you can have socialism without democracy, because the ideas behind socialism is the greatest good for the greatest number of people. And unless you have those democratic means to engage in what you need, then you can't really discuss whether or not people are happy. If you look at the 1820s and 30s, where socialism is first being defined in Europe, it really comes down to how to make the greatest percentage of the population happy. And happy is something that we don't necessarily discuss as a political conversation, but that really was the foundations of what they were looking for.
Well, we do talk about the pursuit of happiness here, and in America, the belief is that you pull yourself up by your bootstraps unless you're born with that silver spoon in your mouth, and you have the opportunity to work for what you want, and that there is capitalism, but there's no government system in place that is seen as a wall between you and your happiness, and that may be part of some sort of what some people see as propaganda, but it is there nonetheless. So let's talk about the idea of happiness. Mm-hmm. And is socialism the road to happiness? And why isn't capitalism the same kind of road?
Yeah, that's a big set of questions there.
Yes, we're here to ask those big questions.
I would not say necessarily that socialism is the road to happiness. I think there are lots of roads to happiness, and we could spend an entire program talking about what is happiness and how to get there. But the problem with capitalism, and I think in order to understand socialism, we really do need to understand capitalism. But the problem with capitalism is that we don't have the same freedoms. We don't have the same freedom to pursue happiness or whatever it is we want to pursue. We need to understand capitalism as a system that sets apart from the beginning people who, a small minority of people who own what Karl Marx called means of production, everything from land to natural resources to, in today's world, whole companies, intellectual property, and all the rest of the people, which includes most of us. And when I talk about this with my students, I always ask them, you know, who owns their own business here? And usually no one raises their hand. I said, well, we're all part of this majority working class proletariat. And so capitalism, as we live it today, is this, and as it has been for the past 100, 200 years, is a system where from the beginning of our lives, we are set off on different courses based on whether we own these means of production or not.
And I think one of the other things that ties into that, you mentioned pulling yourself up by the bootstraps. One of the things that I think the socialists had in mind originally was that it is not necessarily an individual goal for happiness, but sort of a greater sense of group happiness. And again, incredibly hard to define group happiness, but an acknowledgement that it is not just about you personally and if you are individually happy, but as a society, what we can do to make a society better as a whole.
Has socialism been discredited by the collapse of communism in the USSR and Eastern Europe? Many people point to that and say, "Oh, look, it didn't work in Eastern Europe. Why would it? How could it possibly work here?"
I would argue exactly the opposite, actually, because I don't think what you see in Soviet Union was socialism. As early as 1919, the socialists and the communists separated, and the socialists in Western Europe said, we are not a dictatorial organization. That's not what socialism is. And so the communism that was defined by the Cold War in the United States is completely different from the socialist goals moving forward. So the failure of communism was specific to communism and really outside of the expectations of socialism.
I agree with that to a certain extent, but I think the utter failure of the Soviet Union, and I don't just mean the collapse of it, but actually when it was alive, was the utter failure in terms of just completely limiting the political and economic freedom of Soviet citizens. That definitely has left a bad taste in people's mouths, and people. Unfortunately, when they think socialism, they don't think of the words of Marx and Engels because they've probably never read them. They think of the Soviet Union and the Gulag and Stalin and just the utter dictatorial regime of the Soviet Union. And so I think that has left a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths about socialism. But I also think that the Cold War, where for decades and decades, the United States was issuing so much propaganda against socialism, against communism, against Marx, that, I mean, I think socialism to a previous generation is what terrorism is to this generation. It's something that, you know, no one would ever dream of identifying as a socialist lest they be ostracized from society during the Cold War era. Whereas, you know, I think a similar phenomenon today is terrorism. You know, you wouldn't say, I'm a terrorist, and expect to get away with that.
Go ahead.
I would agree, Jenny. That when I talked to students and I asked them if they were socialist, to them there wasn't a question. That was something that was an acceptable term. Whereas if I was
acceptable
to
term,
an identifiable term, a number of my students absolutely would define themselves as socialists. Whereas if I was to ask someone in my parents' generation who lived through the Cold War, socialism is by definition a pejorative term. That's not something they would aspire to.
Yeah.
Go ahead,
yeah.
Robert.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, this generational divide. And in fact, Pew did a poll a few years ago, and they found that among people 18 to 29 years old in America, 49% had a positive view of socialism, whereas only 47% had a positive view of capitalism. A similar poll in 2014 found that, so this is before the Sanders campaign starts, 47% of Americans would vote for a socialist, and 69% of those polled who are under 30 were in favor of voting for a socialist.
We're talking about socialism. What is it? How do you define it? And is it different or similar to democratic socialism? Certainly, we've heard that term a lot because that's what Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders claims to be. Joining me in studio are two Point Park University professors, Jenny Rice and Robert Ross. You can join the conversation at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email ESSPGH at WESA.FM on Twitter at ESSPGH. Let's go to the phones. We have Carlana from Pittsburgh on the line. Hi, Carlana. You're on the air.
Hi. Yes, I'm calling to point out that countries today, we're talking about 2016, countries today that fit the category, the general category of democratic socialists, actually have more successful businesses and forms of capitalism than we have here in the United States. For example, because Canada has health care for all, universal health care, there are capitalist companies that will choose to locate their businesses in Canada instead of the United States because they don't have to be bothered with health care insurance policies like they have to in the United States. This is also true of Europe. Germany is would fit the category of a democratic socialist country, and they have fantastic businesses. They have one of the most successful capitalist countries in the world, and yet they fit the category, the definition of democratic socialist. And
well, let me jump in. Let me jump in, Carlana. Do we have, are these countries, when Carlana points to these examples, and she's probably not alone in thinking this way, are these countries that are truly models of democratic socialism, or are they simply using elements of socialism in their country and in their economic system? Go ahead, Robert.
I think as the Democratic Socialists of America define socialism, certainly countries like the Scandinavian countries would fit the description of socialism. It would be – there are a lot of Marxists, a lot of socialists who say no way. These are capitalist countries that might take a bit of elements from socialism. But I think beyond the nomenclature, I think that's a little bit arbitrary. I agree that countries that use things like universal healthcare, which of course includes just about every other industrialized country in the world, or countries that give paid maternity leave as a guarantee, which includes every country in the world except for the United States and three others. Those countries are more successful in terms of the economy, or as we were speaking of earlier, happiness. People are healthier there, and so I think we really need to get beyond, you know, the words, is this socialist or is this not socialist, and look at the quality of life. And absolutely, I agree with the caller that the quality of life in those countries and the attraction to economic enterprises is much greater.
Thank you for that. Call Carlana, 412-246-2002 is the number if you would like to join the conversation. Questions you might have about socialism, the history of socialism, and also the stigma attached to socialism and why it exists. What is the history of socialism in the United States? We've heard about people like Eugene Debs. You know, what did they do? Why are they remembered? Why is someone like Eugene Debs in the history books?
I mean, I think early on, very early, 1820s, 1830s, there were socialist initiatives in the United States before someone like Eugene Debs, you know, Robert Owens' New Harmony Group. There's lots of different places where you see socialist attempts. But as far as a large political movement in a national scale, it's never really taken hold in the United States in the same way. And I do think a lot of that comes from some of the fears of the revolutionary aspects that happened in Europe and trying to hold on to the democracy that existed in the United States and not allowing for the kind of massive public change that you saw happening in Europe throughout the 19th century and into the 20th century.
Is, you know, socialism something that has changed in terms of the word and how we react to it? I know you pointed to some statistics and how some of your students are self-identifying themselves in class. It wasn't very long ago, within the last decade, that if you referred to somebody as a liberal, I mean, that was one of the most horrible things you could say about somebody. And now, now is it not only is that acceptable to say, and people are back to identifying themselves as liberals, but are also incorporating socialists in how they self-gloss. So is socialism something that is acceptable and maybe even practical in the U.S. today?
I definitely think that socialism has had a changeable term over time. I think any sort of political theory term is in some ways utopian. It's an ideal of where you'd like to aspire to be, but to actually get there is always the challenge. And I do think that it is a term that is being defined vastly differently by different individuals. It can be thrown around as a pejorative by a certain population in the United States right this minute. But I do think that it has become something that a lot of young people aspire to because they have some very real, very valid frustrations with the system that they live in right now. And socialism is offering some options that they're not seeing from other groups.
Yeah, I think the popularity of socialism right now, especially among young people, is the same reason that it was relatively popular earlier in the 20th century and late 19th century, and that is the relative failure of capitalism. And I think our students see this as well as anyone when they have thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars of debt, when the job market is not as good as it could have been. When we walk down the streets of Pittsburgh and we see homeless people sleeping on the streets, when people go bankrupt because they have so many healthcare costs. And I think that identifying those conditions, of course, the people who live with those conditions know them very well, but I think the Occupy movement, of which I'm proud to say some of our Point Park students were part of here in Pittsburgh, I think the Occupy movement raised a lot of these issues into the mainstream and made it acceptable to critique capitalism and to look for alternatives to capitalism.
I want to come back to that point, but we have a caller on the line. It's James in the South Hills. Hi, James. You're on the air. Welcome.
Oh, hey, guys. Hey, professors. Thanks for, the discussion. I wanted to find out more about Greece and the local collapse of their government and also Portugal. Are they that's why when I think of socialism, that's what I think about. So hopefully you can touch on that, and I look forward to your discussion.
Sure. Thanks for that.
Yes,
that
thank you, James.
Question. I'm not an expert on Greece or Portugal, but I'm a bit familiar with Greece. My understanding of Greece is that the Syriza party that was elected into office was elected specifically to counter the austerity, sort of capitalism on steroids policies that were being imposed by the European Union. And almost immediately, they turned their back on the people of Greece and went straight for these neoliberal austerity programs. So Greece is an unfortunate case that they were elected under principles that you could certainly call anti-capitalists. I don't know if you could call them socialists, perhaps. But then the elected government just very quickly turned their back on the people.
And just to add just a point to that, a lot of it does have to do with the European Union and the economy of the European Union and the fact that you do have incredibly strong economies, less so now than you did 3 to 5 years ago. But countries like Germany that had a very strong economy, and it was incredibly hard for a country like Greece to be able to compete with the capitalist system that was put in place and to meet the needs and the expectations that were being placed on them by the European Union.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we're talking about socialism. What is it? Would it work in the United States? What is the form of socialism that Bernie Sanders is proposing, and would it work and improve our economic prospects in the United States? 412-246-2002, the number to call if you want to join the conversation. And I want to get back to your point, Robert, about you've basically said that America, that capitalism has failed in America, and yet we still are identified as a capitalist country. We still have plenty of people who think, hey, this is the greatest country in the world. So why would we want to deny the worth of capitalism?
Well, I think it's a relative failure. It certainly has not failed for many people. And again, you only need to walk down the streets of Pittsburgh. I was walking through Market Square at lunch yesterday, and just the wealth oozing from all of the new fancy restaurants there, and the big office towers going up. Capitalism makes a good number of people pretty wealthy, but you only need to walk a couple blocks from Market Square to see the growing numbers of homeless, the growing numbers of people addicted to drugs and homeless, the unemployed, the underemployed. And then go a little bit further from Pittsburgh and look at towns in the suburbs of Pittsburgh that have been completely decimated by the loss of the steel industry still today. And go beyond the United States and look at cities and countries around the world that are living in abject poverty and growing poverty, and people who are losing their farmland, people who are forced to live in slums around the world. We have a growth in slums around the world. We have a growth in poverty. And I think if anyone challenges the idea that capitalism hasn't failed, then I think they really aren't looking very far.
Mark on Twitter asks, is there an alternative to an economic system that puts corporate greed ahead of human need? So this is someone who is echoing your sentiments there. And Jenny, you're nodding your head.
I'd like to say that there is. I don't know that I could define what that is, though. But I think that's part of the goal, is to open up the conversation that more people are discussing and more people are having a conversation.
Is socialism, is it practical in the U.S. today? I mean, are we at the, do we have, private corporations seem to be a permanent fixture in the U.S., so why would people even want to consider the idea?
I think that, I mean, first of all, I don't think socialism can be or should be something that's voted in to American society or any other society, or it shouldn't be just voted in. It needs to be a mass popular movement. Workers of all stripes need to work together to put pressure on their employers, to put pressure on the government and institutions to start fighting the massive inequality that we see. And also, not unconnected to that, the racism, institutionalized racism, the misogyny that is very much part of this society.
Is that the kind of socialism Bernie Sanders is talking about?
So as I was reading up on these questions about whether or not Sanders is a socialist, one of the conversations that I saw defined him as a socialist pre-Marx, which is an interesting, very academic distinction. But basically what they were suggesting is that pre-Marx and pre those definitions of socialism, that there was a world of real inequality and a very, very small percentage of people who lived in incredible luxury amidst a group of widespread poverty, and how to deal with the needs of those who lived in that kind of poverty. And I do think that Sanders is looking at those kinds of questions.
And we're down to about 30 seconds or so, but if Bernie Sanders were to be elected president, would he be the first, really be the first truly socialist president of the United States? Didn't Teddy and Franklin Roosevelt introduce elements of what we're talking about as presidents?
To some extent. I mean, I think it's arguable. Sanders would certainly be the first president who identifies as a socialist, as far as I know. Depending on which definition of socialism we use, you could say Ronald Reagan was a socialist because he grew the size of government with the massive military spending, perhaps more than anyone else. But Sanders would be the first who identifies as a socialist.
And quickly, the difference between democratic socialism and socialism is what?
Degree, perhaps, I think, to put
it. So borrowing elements, as other European countries have
Absolutely.
Done.
Yes, yes.
Well, this has been fascinating. I want to thank both of you for joining us. Jenny Rice is an assistant professor of history at Point Park University. Robert Ross, an associate professor of global cultural studies, talking about socialism. Thank you both for joining us in studio. It's been a fun conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And coming up, a look at the continued impact of the organization Strong Women, Strong Girls, celebrating a decade of existence. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.